This morning's scripture reading would be Hebrews 5, 1 through 4. Hebrews 5, 1 through 4. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God. With the ignorance and wayward, since he is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins and does those of other people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when he is called by God, just as Aaron was.
Morning. Just want to give one more plug for the training classes coming up on Sunday night. Tonight starts the two-week training classes for song leaders. I don't know if I'm allowed to use the word mandatory, but if there's a word just underneath mandatory, if you would like to participate in song leading here, we'd really strongly encourage you to participate in these. I think it's going to be helpful to us as a congregation as a whole to have our song leaders go through this, and we'll all be on the same page of what we expect, and I think it's going to be really positive and good. I was thinking this morning, Bobby, that we need to add yet another training class to the end of our rotation. Have Keith Riggs set up cones in the parking lot and carry the communion trays through them. Zach Caldwell passed through the sacred rite of Christian initiation this morning by spilling half the tray on himself at the back of the auditorium, and that's something maybe we could add some training to later. We have all done it. We have all done it, so I usually do it when Celine's wearing some like completely white outfit is when I usually spill the tray. So we're continuing our series on the book of Hebrews this morning, and here we get into really the meat of the book of Hebrews, and we're going to be looking at Christ as a priest. This is such a significant topic to the book of Hebrews, it's going to take us 4 weeks just to talk about the priesthood of Christ in Hebrews. And we're going to leave out a lot. I mean, that's how much the meat of the book of Hebrews is dedicated to the priesthood of Christ and makes four distinct arguments for why not only can Christ be a priest, but why he's the perfect priest, the true and better priest, the best priest that ever could be priest, is the argument that's going to be made here in Hebrews. And it's going to make this case very elaborately beginning in chapter 5. And so if you want to take a look in chapter 5, we're going to look at the first 10 verses today and emphasize the obedient priesthood of Christ. And as always, we want to speak about the questions that loom behind the text. This is a sermon, the book of Hebrews is really a sermon. And so it's addressing questions and issues that are on the mind of the Christians at that time. The first four chapters have talked about how does God speak to us? And it talks about Christ the better messenger, Christ the better message. Christ is a better messenger than angels. Christ is a better messenger than prophets, even than Moses. Not only that, he's a better message, that what he has to say is better than what they said. He himself is a better message. But now the question kind of flips, and instead of asking who speaks to us from God, the question is who speaks for us to God? This is a hard question for us to appreciate because of the 2,000-year difference between us and them. 2,000 years of separation between us and the Levitical priesthood of the Jewish faith. The priesthood was the mainstay of the Jewish faith. In the world of Roman occupation, the Jewish people didn't have a king. The Jewish people rarely had a prophet. But the priesthood remained, and it became the center of identity for the people. If you read the Old Testament, the discussion about the priesthood comes up a lot, not just in priestly books like Leviticus, but even through the narratives of the text. When you're reading about David, it interjects every so often who is the priest at that time and what he said to David. When you read about different characters of the Old Testament, the priesthood is kind of looming in the background. As important players in the story of what it means to be Jewish, what it means to be Israel. So when the people of this time begin to ask these questions, one of the questions that came up is, did following Christ mean giving up the priesthood? This is one of the things that people would have asked. Now, when you became a Christian, you believed Jesus is the Messiah, but do you have a priest anymore? Do you Christians have a priest? Do you have a priesthood? Do you have an altar? Do you have sacrifices? Do you have a temple? And all the things that go with it. Do you give up your avenue of communication with God when you start following Christ? And for them, this was a huge question. Didn't want to do that. Furthermore, the Christians were going to claim that Jesus fills that gap. Jesus himself steps in between us and God. But how does Jesus stack up to Aaron? The priesthood of the Jewish faith was dependent on its connection to Aaron. The sons of Aaron, not just Levi, we call it the Levitical priesthood because they're sons of Levi, but not all the sons of Levi got to be priests. Specifically, the descendants of Aaron get to be priests. What makes your priest, Jesus, if you want to call him that, a better priest than Aaron? How does he stack up and how does he measure up? So these are the questions that are going into the text that kind of help us understand what's being discussed. The answer from the text is this: Jesus is the true and better priest. Reason number one, because he was an obedient priest. Let's look in verses 1 through 3 and start the discussion. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. Take a look at what's going on. Verse 1 basically just gives you a definition of the priesthood, which is great for those of us who are 2,000 years later, don't really have a lot of priests that we know very well. So, what is a priest? Well, verse 1 tells you, every high priest chosen from among men, so a priest has to be chosen, we'll get to that in a few verses, is appointed to act on behalf of men. Okay, so number one, we would like to have a relationship with God, we would like to speak to God, but we all feel inadequate to do so. And so the priest was the person who spoke on my behalf to God. He went between me and God. This is an important point that comes up, for instance, in the book of Job. If you read the book of Job, one of the things that Job is the most angry about is he has something he would like to say to God, and he would like God to give him an answer, but he doesn't feel like there's any way to do that. As Job often says, there's no referee. There's no go-between. If God speaks to me, he burns me up in his glory. I can't stand before God and have an argument. I can't plead my case. I don't have a lawyer. I don't have an intercessor or a mediator. There's nobody on my side. I want to say something to God and I want him to speak back, but it just doesn't work that way. The priesthood was the answer to that. The priesthood was the referee. The priesthood stood between you and God and spoke on behalf of mankind to the Creator. How does he do that? He acts on behalf of men in relation to God to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. So here's the way it works. You're a sinner, and you want to have a relationship with a pure and holy God. So you bring your sacrifice. But what business do you have offering God a sacrifice? What business do you have offering God worship? You're a sinner. And so the priest filled that gap. The priest took your sacrifice, took your offering, and made the sacrifice on your behalf to God. And he was the go-between. So verse 1 is simply just describing in broad terms the role of the priest. In particular here, he's talking about the high priest, but you get the idea. The priesthood serves this capacity. It's the go-between between sinful man and a holy and sinless God. But what's the problem? What makes the priesthood of Aaron so great anyway? Does this actually work? If you're in the Jewish world of thought, you hear the logic I just gave you and you say, okay, that makes some sense. The priests are holier than me. Why are they holier than me? Because the book of Leviticus says they are. The book of Leviticus says, here's how you wash your hands and here's how you make the sacrifice and here's how you attend to your clothing and here's what fabrics you use and here's what perfume you use and here's what... And so the book of Leviticus made them very, very holy. And you could kind of swallow that and say, okay, the priesthood of Aaron is better than me just going to God because they're so holy. But what the preacher in Hebrews says is, have you ever really thought about that for just a moment? Does that really add up? Don't get me wrong, the priesthood of Aaron is better than some pagan priesthood because of the relationship they have with God. But what's the problem? Let's repeat it. Sinful people bring their sacrifices to the priests, and the priests offer them to God. What's the problem? The priests are sinners. Because of their holiness and all the ceremony, we kind of suspend our belief about that, right? We can pretend in our minds that they are holier than us, and they are, that they're better than us, maybe they are, that they are more prepared than us to make the sacrifices, maybe they are. But at the end of the day, they have sin and I have sin, and we're in the same boat. Neither one of us is actually adequate to stand before God. And so the preacher here in verse 2 and 3 kind of, I think, makes a little joke out of it. In verse 2, he says, he can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward. Why is the priest so sympathetic? Because he's one of you. Read verse 2. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Yeah, he can really sympathize with you sinners. Do you know why? Because he's a sinner. But that's not our problem, is it? Our problem isn't that we just don't have enough sinners to talk to God. Our problem is we're looking for somebody who has a right to speak to God. And all we found is a sinner in fancier clothes. All we found is a sinner who washes his hands better than me. That's a little bit of an overstatement, but you get the point. But ultimately, this person who is the mediator isn't a perfect mediator. He's not an ideal mediator because he's too much like me. And not nearly enough like God. And in order to be a go-between, he's got to be both. So yes, we've got the human part down. The priests are very human. They've got all the same weaknesses of you ignorant, wayward masses. But what about his sins? Read verse 3. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. Do you see the problem? Our priest had to be a priest for himself before he could be our priest. The priest is holier than me, so he offers sacrifices for my sin. But who offers sacrifices for the priest? Well, the high priest. Oh, well, that fixes everything. So the priest offers sacrifices for me. The high priest offers sacrifices for the priest. Who offers sacrifices for the high priest? We're not getting anywhere, are we? Maybe we need a high priest. Okay, well, you see where this is going to go, right? We can't get anywhere. Because no matter who we pick and how many high we put in front of him, right? At the end of the day, we've got a human being who is a sinner trying to stand in for the rest of us who are sinners too. And so the text really emphasizes this. He is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins. You see that point? When they come to the Christian and say, well, you don't even have a priesthood when you become a Christian. The preacher says, how good was your priesthood? Aaron was great and all, but who offered sacrifices for Aaron? Who was the priest for the priests? And it's a little riddle, and no one has an answer to it, because there isn't a good answer until you come to Jesus Christ. And so in verse 4, he's going to move forward. Look at verse 4. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. Now this is an important move, and I want you to notice kind of logically what's happening here. Preacher, are you saying the priests aren't any good at all? Are you saying the priest had no right to be priest? No. The priest had every right to be priest. How come? Because God said so. That's what verse 4 says. Who decides who's the priest? You see, you didn't get to be a priest because you were such a great fella. You didn't get to be a priest because you were so much better than everybody else. You got to be a priest because God said that's the priest. Why is Levi the tribe of the priests? Because God said Levi is going to be the priest. Of all the descendants of Levi, why are the sons of Aaron the priests? Because God said Aaron's going to be the priest. Is it because Aaron's such a great person? Have you even read Numbers? Aaron's terrible. Aaron's a mess. Moses goes up the mountain, gets the Ten Commandments, come back down the mountain. Aaron has built a golden calf in his absence. And when asked how it happened, Aaron's brilliant response is, I don't know, the people threw some gold in, a calf came out. Aaron's a mess. So is Aaron a priest because he is a wonderful moral exemplar, sinless and pure and holy? No, of course not. Aaron's the priest because God said he was the priest. That's how you get to be priest. Who's priest today? Whoever God said was priest. That was it, right? That was the system. Why is that important? Because it helps you understand this important consequence. No one takes this honor for himself, it says, but only when called by God. What does that mean? If God can call these priests, like Aaron, if God can make a priest out of a sinner, then doesn't God have the right to pick a new and better priest? Doesn't God have a right to say, I'm now going to pick someone else to be priest, and he's way better than the priest you had before? So verses 1 through 3, what's so great about your priest anyway? Turns out they were sinners. Well, how'd they get to be priest? God picked them. So who's going to be our priest? Whoever God picks. And has God picked a true and better priest? Well, as it turns out, verse 5 is going to answer that question. Verse 5 and 6 says this, so also Christ. Notice the connection there. Verse 4 ended, appointed priest just as Aaron was, so also Christ. Did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. As he says also in another place, you are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. So when you read verse 5, I want you to read it carefully here. You've got to be a little more Jewish on verse 5, okay? When you see the word Christ, don't think Jesus. Don't get ahead of yourself. That's the next step. When you see the word Christ, think Messiah. Now, the New Testament says Jesus is the Messiah. Okay, so I'm not trying to divorce those two concepts completely. But the point that he's making is, could God pick another priest? Could God, for instance, pick the Messiah to be priest? Well, if anybody could trump Aaron, I mean, if you've got to pick somebody to be better than Aaron, wouldn't it be the Messiah we've waited for all these years? Whoever he is, he's not even making a case for Jesus yet. He's going to. But if God sent such a person as the anointed, the word Messiah means anointed. It's a word that literally means the one God picked. Who could be picked as a better priest than the one God picked? It's his name. He is the one anointed by God. Aaron was anointed. God anointed Messiah. So if God picked Aaron, couldn't he pick the one he picked? Couldn't he pick the one who was anointed to be a prophet, a king, and now also a priest? Couldn't that be a better priest? What gives him the right to be priest? Same thing that gave Aaron a right to be priest. Aaron didn't make himself priest. How did Aaron become priest? God appointed him. How is Jesus our priest? It's not because we really, 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 really want him to be. It's not because he wanted to be. The text says he is priest because God picked him. He is priest because God said so. In fact, it says it like this. The same one who said this said that. Read the text. He was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son. The same person who called him son called him priest. Does God have a right to call the Messiah his son? We read chapter 1, we have to say yes. God has already declared him to be son. Surely he can say he's now priest. In fact, I think the point of the verse is, God gets to say anything he wants about Jesus, and that suddenly becomes true. God says, you're my son. He's the son. God says, you're the king of the universe. He's the king of the universe. God says, you are alive from the dead. And Sunday morning, he gets up. Whatever God says about Jesus is going to be true. And God says, the same one who says he's my son says he's also my priest. Could a son be a better priest than a Levite? I got to say, that's a pretty nice deal. Christianity is the only religion in the world where the judge is our father and the lawyer is his son. That's a pretty nice situation, right? The person pleading on our behalf is eternally begotten of the Father. That sounds like a pretty good priest to me. The same one who calls him son calls him priest. Furthermore, the new priest will be a priest like Melchizedek. What does that mean? We don't have enough time this morning for that one. That's what that means. So sorry about that. And that's exactly what the writer in the text says. He says we're going to have to come back to that one. There's like a whole chapter in Hebrews just on the priesthood of Melchizedek, because no one in the first century understood it either, and you're in good company. So we may get to that later on, but for right now, the point you need to get is Levites weren't the only priest. That's his point. You see, if there had only ever been one kind of priest, and it was the descendants of Aaron, then you might have a problem swallowing the idea that God wanted another priest. There's only ever been one. But what the writer here says is, don't you remember? There were priests before Levi. There were priests before Aaron. The priests of Levi and Aaron are the second priests at best. Because in the days of Abraham, the grandfather, right? In the days of Abraham, there was a priest named Melchizedek. Melchizedek, by the way, is a great name. In Hebrew, it means king of righteousness. Okay, great name. He says, I'm going to have a priest whose name will be king of righteousness. There was another priest before Levi, and there'll be one after Levi's gone. So that's a sermon for another day. But the point he's making is he's just opening their eyes to the possibility. Could there be another priest? Not only could there be, there was another priest. If God can say he's the son, surely he can give him the job of priest. If you can swallow that part of it, a son of God, then everything else becomes simpler. Of course, he could be a priest. So he's appointed a priest, just like Aaron was. But now we're going to go a step further. What makes him better than Aaron? What makes him better than the priest of Aaron? Not just because he's appointed by God, that makes him equal. Everybody catch that? Aaron was appointed by God. Jesus was appointed by God. So now they're on equal footing. But now the text is going to go a step further. The Christ is better. How come? Because he could do something that Aaron and his descendants never could. Verse 7 and 8. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who is able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. So Jesus, in verse 7, does what a priest does. What does a priest do? Priest prays. Priest speaks to God. Did Jesus speak to God? Yes, he did. But not only that, Jesus speaks to God and is heard in a way that no priest has ever been heard. How come? The text says because he was reverent. Now, do you mean to tell me that no priest of the Jewish religion was ever respectful before? Now, we're going a step beyond respectful. To fully and completely revere God. To fully and completely acknowledge the godness of God is what Jesus did. What would a perfectly reverent person be? He'd be an obedient person. Because if you really respect who God is, you have to obey. And every act of sin is ultimately an act of irreverence. It's an act of dismissing who God is. Don't we tell our kids that? Right? If you respect me as your father, actually, we usually say, you're going to respect me as your father. And then we tell them what they're going to do, right? We want our kids to connect the ideas of respect and obedience. And God says the same thing. Were the priests of Aaron respectful? I suppose so. They were respectful. They went through the motions. They washed their hands. They put on the appropriate attire. They did all the things Leviticus said they were supposed to do. Were they perfectly respectful? Did they have perfect reverence? Did they have perfect obedience? Listen to the perfect reverence of Christ in the prayer that's being referred to here. What prayer is he quoting here? He doesn't quote it, but what prayer is he alluding to? In the garden, Jesus says, if it be at all possible, let this cup pass from me, Yet not my will, but thine be done. That is perfect reverence. Perfect reverence. Why? Because it's a prayer that says, I am ready to be perfectly obedient. It is honest. The prayer said, I don't want to do it. The prayer said, I don't want to die. If it's at all possible, let's not do this. Nevertheless, God is God, and whatever you say is what I'm going to do. Perfect reverence, because it's perfect obedience. What does the text say? Jesus prayed, and God heard him in a way he's never heard anyone else, because he's perfectly reverent. Why is he reverent? Because he's perfectly obedient. And he learned obedience, though he were a son. That would be enough for me, right? I could have ended the sermon there. Jesus is a son. A son's got to be a better priest than somebody who's not a son, right? That's got to be good. The sermon here goes a step further and says, he goes a step beyond sonship. He's a perfect son. He's an obedient son. He's not a prodigal son who just happens to luck into the right gene pool. He's not just part of the right family tree. He perfects sonship in his obedience. The most profound mystery of the book of Hebrews is in that sentence. He learns obedience by the things that he suffers. I never write myself notes for this particular verse because I never have any idea what I'm going to say about it until I get up here. I struggle with it every time. My mind does not have the capacity to understand how the divine Son of God learns anything. I don't understand it. But the text says, here is the truth of the matter. That as good as Jesus is, watch the language here, he becomes gooder. As good as Jesus is, he becomes better in his suffering. He becomes a more perfect son. He becomes a more perfect priest, a more reverent person, because he put his money where his mouth was. Not my will, but thine be done. And he goes to the cross and does exactly that. He learns obedience by the things that he suffers. Can you imagine a better priest than that? A priest who is appointed like Aaron. A priest who's not just an Israelite, but a son. A priest who doesn't have to start out by saying, Lord, please ignore my sins so I can talk about the other folks. But a priest who comes with perfect reverence and obedience, even in the death of the cross. Not my will, but thine be done. He's a better priest because he is an obedient priest. In fact, we can go a step further. He is a perfect priest. Verses 9 and 10 end with this. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Do we have a priesthood in Christianity? Yes, we do. And we have one the same way the Jewish people got it. God picked it. Only this time God has not picked another fallible man, another irreverent human being, another disobedient child. He has picked the perfectly obedient Son who in perfect reverence speaks to God on our behalf, having none of his own sins to clean up before he gets there. Having been made perfect, he is now the author, the originator of eternal salvation and offers us something that we never had in Aaron. Christianity is not less because it doesn't have a priesthood from Aaron. It is more because it has a true and better priest named Jesus the Christ. Being a perfect priest, he now can offer salvation to us disobedient children. He can now do the job a priest was made to do. Verse 1 said, what's a priest's job? To act on behalf of sinful men. Well, we've got plenty of sinful men here. And now we've got a priest. Christ comes and does his job. And if you have not turned to Christ as that perfect high priest who speaks to God on your behalf, if you have not turned to him in reverence and submission to his will, and faith and repentance and baptism, or if perhaps you've turned away, turn back, because the perfectly reverent priest is willing to speak for you. As we stand and sing a word of encouragement, won't you come if you need to at this time?